Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man who's just done a big fart and is aware that Nick Frost is going to have to stand around in it for 5 minutes, and he's hoping he's not going to waft it through the curtain with him. It's Richard Herring! Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. This is where we started. There's no preamble. This is the podcast. No messing around. This is it. This is Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as all the cool kids are calling it, Rehearlestapur. There's a lot of cool kids in today. I'm amazed I managed to remember that. I hadn't even written it down, so it's starting to stick. Though someone did come up with one that's spelt Rehypnol. Can't remember what it was. I'm trying to do one that... It'd be good if I just come back accidentally one that's Rhythm, wouldn't it? That would be nice if it's Rhythm. Be too good. Yes, it's been 2 weeks hiatus, so I hope you've not been missing us too much. I didn't enjoy the Queen's Golden Jubilee. I thought it went on too long myself. I don't know about anyone else. We weren't able to do this because of the bloody fucking Queen thinking she's it, 60 years on the throne. I only saw about 5 minutes on the Tuesday. I just thought it's gone on a bit too long. And the BBC were very obsequious, I thought. I didn't like the fact that they were sort of going... All the questions were, why do you think this is the most brilliant party in history? What is it that makes it so fantastic? It would just be good if, just for a little balance, someone just said, it's not that good. Everyone's singing out of tune, especially those small children. Someone should have punched them in the face. don't you realise how important this is? This is the Queen. Send her to the Tower! Should have done. They could have had that. They could have had them under the stairs, like Richard II. I think I've got that right. I'm sure someone will tell me if I haven't got... Who the princes Richard and Edward were killed by Richard II. Is that correct, Wikipedia audience? Yeah. Richard III, damn. Richard II was, of course, he was the one with the lollards, wasn't he? boy king, wasn't he? He had old Wat Tyler, had his head cut off, didn't he? Hey, who's with me? On my 13th century history. It might not be the 13th century. I studied this, but I've got a degree in this. And that's the only thing I fucking learnt about was Richard II and the Lollards, and I'm not convinced any of that is true. Anyway, in very exciting news, penguins, in 20th century penguins are in the news from the early 20th century. I don't know if you saw this, that one of the guys who was on the polar expedition with Captain Scott, George Murray Levick, he was there to look at penguins. It was the March of the Penguins, the first film they did of that, except they're not quite as nice as they make out in that film, because he witnessed them doing depraved sexual acts of hooligan. They basically were raping dead penguins, and that's what penguins do. And And he was very, he thought they were depraved, these penguins, because they were having homosexual sex and raping dead penguins. But I'm not sure you can judge penguins by the human moral yardstick. I'm not. He didn't report on this. It's just come out because it was too sensitive. It turns out that penguins, it's just the position of the dead penguins. The penguins, because they look like little men walking around like that in dinner suits, but they're birds. They're not human beings. So to them, they're not being necrophiliac penguins. They are. They're just having sex with what looks like a willing mate. But we may talk more about this later. But it's. What I quite like in it is this thing was published in a book that wasn't allowed to be, only 100 copies were made, and it said this must never be made public, what penguins are doing. It would be too shocking for the Edwardians. But it's now out, thanks to Douglas Russell, who's curator of eggs and nests at the Natural History Museum, which is my favourite job title ever. Do you think when he heard he'd got that, yes, I'm the curator of eggs and nests. And I wonder if there's a curator of eggs and a curator of nests, and he's just so good he's doing both of them. Or do you just more automatically become, if you're one, that's just, you're doing eggs, you also get nests, that's part of the job. So, yes, I'm the curator. Has anyone ever met a curator of eggs and nests here? Has that ever got any? You've met, it's your job.
It used to be your job.
It seems unlikely. Are you lying just to get... You've got a very mild form of Munchausen syndrome. I've got a way of getting the... What's your name?
Karen.
Where you are, yeah, I'm just sensing you're not from the United Kingdom.
You're very perceptive.
I am. I'm like Henry Higgins. I'm sensing somewhere abroad. would that be right? Whereabouts were you the creator of... Were you the creator of eggs and nests, Karen? Or,
yeah.
You had to catalogue them. What was your favourite nest? Eggs, everyone likes them, but it's the nests. Which bird makes the most exquisite nest, in your opinion?
They're all the same.
Is this why you no longer work as a curator? Just chucked them all in a big skip. They're all it's just a lot of fucking twigs. What are the chances of that happening? I'm not convinced she is a curator of eggs and nests. I'm gonna Google you and find out. At the Natural History Museum?
No, at a small-town museum in Canada.
Small-town museum. Yeah, all the fucking Canadian... Small-town museum in Canada. Yeah, all the Canada birds have the same nest. Here in the United Kingdom, birds have very different kinds of nests. So you're belittling Douglas Russell. I bet he hasn't been mocked very often, Douglas Russell. In front of what will be an audience of probably 30,000 people will hear Douglas Russell being dissed. I hope this gets back to him. Someone up from the Natural History Museum will be listening, going, yeah, Richard Herring took you down. There'll be other people curating other better things than nests. I do eggs as well. Yes, I said egg. And talking of that, that's a neat link I was on Twitter, and Amy Pond, who you know I wanted to marry, the actress who plays her, not so interested in, but she is, you kind of need them both together. But Karen Gillan was saying how much she tweeted an egg pun and said how much she liked egged puns. And I just thought, if only she'd seen Histor's Eye, Leon Herring's Histor Eye, which was entirely that's all it was really terrible egg puns. I could have been married to her instead of my bloody wife. another news, David Cameron, who is the Prime Minister. Did you know that? I thought it was still Tony Blair's, but it's unbelievable. He left his daughter in a pub for 15 minutes on her own. He's taken his daughter, she's 10, he took her down the pub, which I think is a bit irresponsible, but he left her there, and they all left, him and his Secret Service people and his wife and the rest of his family, they left her in a pub. But I think it shows weakness that he went, when he realised she was gone, that he went back to get her. I'd have respected him a lot more. He said, she is in the pub now that she is gone. I will not... I've done too many U-turns this month. We just have to accept that... Nancy, I think she's called. Named after the prostitute in Oliver Twist, I'm guessing. That is what I'm guessing. High aspirations for a Prime Minister's daughter. She's got a lot to live up to. I think we might... I might, you know, just get on with the podcast. Because I think you're warmed. I was going to talk to some of the nerds in the front, but, you know... Maybe we'll save that for the next. It's hard to choose which one. It's like a smorgasbord. Bloke on the end, a little bit cooler than the rest. What's your name?
Daniel.
Did you deliberately pick all these blokes so you would just look sexually attractive to me? Because I tell you, next to this lot, you look like fucking Brad Pitt. If you were out on your own, no one would give you a second look. You stand next to him. Look next to him, this freak of nature you're next to. What's your name?
Jack.
Jack, yeah. What do you do for a living? Have you curated any? No? Have you created anything in your life, would you say? Trouble. Curated trouble. Ooh. Maybe he is the sexy one after all, eh, ladies? A couple of ladies on the back there. Threw on quite a few ladies in a row there. Who do you prefer, Jack or the one whose name I've forgotten? Who looks like he wishes he was in Pirates of the Caribbean. But he aspires to be Mackenzie Crook. I think that's as far as he goes. I'm not going to be Orlando Bloom. Come on, let's face it, that's never. Maybe I could be the bloke from The Office looking a bit sexier than he usually looks. Taking everyone down today, taking no prisoners, am I? Well, look, I'm going to get on with the podcast because we've got two to do today. Later on, I'll be interviewing David Baddiel, as my dad calls him, and finding out if my dad is correct about that. But for the moment, I'll be calling him that. That will be a separate podcast for you at home. You'll have a chance to win loads of prizes that people here in the audience should come along and watch. It's fantastic. The next two are all sold out. Nick has provided like DVDs and film posters, and there's that all important Where Did It All Go Right audiobook is there as well. And some chalk used by Me One and Me Two in a video podcast of Me One versus Me Two Snooker, the popular iTunes podcasts. Which you can listen. There's a new episode out for you at home, but that's for an extra for at home. And I've forgotten to bring Elliot Lyne's book of Mensa Genius along, so I know a lot of you will be upset, yeah. I know a lot of you just come in the hope of winning that, but I might take the address of the winner and post them there, because I've got quite a lot. But anyway, we've built him up enough. So we haven't built him up at all. It's very rare that I get a film star. I've got like a proper movie star. I'm a bit in awe. I don't know which way to look. You may remember him from Man Strokes Woman. He played, according to Wikipedia, he was in Casualty before he was an actor, playing the character Fatso. If that was on my Wikipedia page, I'd take that right off. I edit mine. Nick Frost is too cool to edit his own Wikipedia page and allows these things to stand. Will you please welcome the incredible Nick Frost, ladies and gentlemen? Here he comes. Coming through. There he is.
I've covered this up already. Which one's the Mackenzie Crook one? That one.
Yeah, look at him, Mackenzie Crook. Quite good looking there. Look at the rag bag of nerds.
Like
you must be used to this. You've probably gone to a lot of sci-fi.
Oh, these are nothing compared to the ones I used to get.
So I'm going to ask you a question. I'm sure you've been asked many times before, but let's get the obvious ones out of the way first of all. Do you think you can judge a penguin by a human moral yardstick?
No. I was listening backstage and I thought, is it rape if it's dead? I mean, I don't know. I'm asking. I'm not. I don't know if it works like that.
Well, I mean, they can't give consent, but I don't think.
But they can't not give consent.
Well, they're a penguin and thus unable to give any kind of consent anyway. They don't have that. It's a different. You can't have rape in the animal kingdom. This has always been my excuse. Because an animal cannot consent, can it? An animal is incapable. Sometimes they make noises that sound like they're consenting.
Maybe a parrot could.
Well, it would only be aping. Literally aping.
In some states, parrots, that's probably enough.
It is.
Legally.
So if you can teach a parrot to say,
yes,
lick my cloaca, then you're allowed to do it. Well, that's good. So I feel sorry for the penguins, because they have been held up in this moral way. Have you ever seen March of the Penguins, the film March?
No, I haven't.
No, it's not worth it.
No.
It's a load of penguins, and they aren't even raping dead penguins in it.
Yeah.
If you had that in it, I'd be watching it. They're just sitting
on
eggs.
I'd love to hear Morgan Freeman commentating on that.
It would be good. Well, we got that question out of the way, and there'll be more questions like that.
Sorry, that sounded like an impressionist about to crowbar an impressionist. I wonder what Morgan Freeman would think about that. No, I don't think I could. Yeah, hang on. And then the penguin rapes the other penguin.
Apparently it would sound like that. It's good. We always kick off with this. Somehow it always the first question turns to... That was a perfectly good moral question, a philosophical question about the morality of birds, and it's turned in already turned into a disgusting avenue to go down. So I've been reading up on you today. I'm a big fan of much of your work.
Can I do what you've done?
Yeah, you can take it out. Yeah, because I've only done mine because my thing's gone floppy.
Okay, I think slightly less formal like this. That's all right.
We can put those away. Get rid of those. We can see each other. It's lovely. I often get mistaken for you in the street. I don't know if this happens in the other way around to you. A lot of people think.
I usually get mistaken for Rick Waller.
But often people think I'm you. If I ever get an acting role, which doesn't happen very often, I always assume they've offered it to you first.
As well, you know.
You did have long hair, yeah, as well, yeah.
I think we look quite similar at that point.
But I don't know, does anyone ever say to you, we tried to get Richard Herring for this part, for this movie, but then
he wasn't available.
He was touring. So he was in Andover touring.
There used to be another actor called Nick Frost.
Oh, my God.
And he'd turn up at castings, and the director would go, oh. And he'd say, oh, you wanted the other one, right? And they'd let him do his casting and then he'd never get it.
Aww.
I got a note from his agent. Well, my agent got a note from his agent saying, you'll be pleased to know that Nick Frost has now stopped acting.
Because he's killed himself.
You can keep the name. There was a name wrangle at one point.
He's
dead. Inequity.
He died in the garret.
He was raped to death by a penguin. And he's not going to be acting anymore.
Well, I'm glad that it's just you now on the Nick. Nick Frost, that's quite a popular name, I guess. Stuart Lee, there was another Stuart Lee because they were quite strict about it when Equity started out.
Yeah.
And Stuart Lee, but he'd been working for a while as a stand up, and he just said, I'm not changing my name. And they said, you have to. He said, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
And then he went, All right.
So
it turned out to be quite easy to get around that. He didn't have to put
David Williams changed his name, didn't he?
Yeah.
He is Williams,
yeah.
Isn't he?
Yeah. So people would put in stupid little Michael J. Fox, I presume.
It's Michael L. Fox.
Yeah. Somewhere. Who I often get mistaken for as well. I don't know. I'm in the middle by Japanese people, though. When I was younger, I have to admit. Though if things keep going. No, I won't go down that route so early in the podcast. You can imagine where I was going to go. I'm not going to go there. So, I'm getting booed. I got hissed by someone for not doing the joke I was going to do. You should be cheering me for not doing the Parkinson's material. Not hissing me. I thought of it and then I said, I'm not going to do it. I was a big man. I was a moral man. Don't hiss me for that. How dare you? Sorry, I've turned quite.
You should do it now.
Have you been in many interviews where this? I've done it now. I hadn't really thought there's something, and now I've got older. All right, now I'm old. It looks like I have Parkinson's disease, so people do think I look like
you.
Him.
You fucking you animal.
Nick, turn around a bit, please.
Oh, hello.
How's that? Is that better? I will.
Nick, there's men who've come here to see you, and they don't want to be here to see the side of your face.
I'm sorry that my back was turned to you, it was very rude.
It was. Cocky. He's an actor, so he will just do what you tell him. That's how it is. Yeah. Nick, just Pavlovian.
What lens are we using?
It was funny there, the people at home, because Nick turned to put his back further to the person. A little director's commentary for the people at home. It's not as good, you see. Someone's saying to me, why would I pay to come and see this when I can listen to it for free? That's why! A, I can take the piss out of you, and B, that moments like that, which will never translate.
You couldn't write that.
You could not write it. You couldn't write it. I'm with this series, I'm interviewing a lot of people who are much more successful than me and sort of riding on their coattails to get an almost half full Leicester Square Theatre. I'm interested to see where I went wrong and everyone else went right. And what was the big break? And your career is like astonishing how it kind of came together. It's sort of like an accidental.
I think I'm just very lucky and it just happened. And I didn't care that much in terms of. I never wanted to do anything. You know, I was 29, I was a waiter, and I liked being a waiter, and that was all right for me. Yeah. I was happy with that. And then, you know, I did Spaced, and even after that, even like a week before we started shooting Spaced, I thought, it never happened. It'll never happen. And, it happened, and I went back to waitering after the first series, and I've always had a thing inside me that that says, it'll be all right. No matter what you do, you'll be all right, you know.
So what happened? You were working in a Chiquitos.
Chiquitos, Mexican bar and cantina.
Yeah, I think I've been there.
In Staples Corner?
I don't think it was there are different ones.
Yeah, yeah. There's one in Staples Corner. There's one in Leicester Square.
Okay, well, I think
Cripps Causeway, you know, Bournemouth. I could go on. Yeah.
Do you now own the rest of the week?
I've got two franchises.
And you've been away in kibbutzes and stuff. We might talk about that later, but we've jumped ahead. And you met Simon Pegg via your girlfriend, his girlfriend?
His girlfriend, yeah. She works as a waitress, and me and her got on really well, and she told me he was a stand-up, and I was, like, the funniest waiter, and we kind of met. You know, he said...
Was that nationally...
I was nationally known as the funniest waiter at Inchiquitos.
Could you... I read, again, many of these things may be lies, because they're on Wikipedia... Could you spin the most trays that any waiter in Chiquitos could do?
Yeah.
13 trays?
13.
How could you spin 13 trays?
You got to have a big, strong finger.
Yeah. What, are they just piled on top of each other?
Yeah.
So it's not like 13 on different parts.
On different...
I was imagining...
One on each finger.
Just elbows with a tray. So you've got 13 trays piled up on top of each other.
It's about...
Yeah.
It's about that much trays.
Yeah, that's good for people at home.
Yeah.
I tell you, if you're at home, get 13 trays, put them on top of each other. It's that many trays.
And you just spin them, and then people would say, God, that's a lot of trays.
It's 13. Do you want to come to Hollywood and be in my film? That's more or less what happened.
Well, that's how I got my part in the Tray Spinners. That was my big break.
you kind of bonded with Simon over... you basically spent your youth and your 20s bumming around, doing nothing and watching TV, which many people would think was a bad start to a career.
Yeah.
But for you, turned out to be quite a good way of...
Yeah, it was perfect.
Because you bonded over
I left home really early, then I went away and I went to live in Israel when I was 18, and I was there for almost 2 years, 16 months. And I came back and started working at Chiquitos and met Simon, and that was it. We just clicked. He did that noise of a Star Wars mouse droid.
And I wouldn't know what that was. So if I'd met him, I'd have been just immediately bang.
This is why. This is,
So what is the noise, just in case I meet him? Beep, 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 beep,
beep. And then Chewbacca goes... it scares it off. And I'd never heard anyone do that noise before. No. And it meant something to me. You know, it was a secret language and...
But you kind of basically ended up living together, sleeping together.
Yeah, we did, same, a single bed for 9 months.
That's all it takes.
And it didn't... and it didn't feel weird. It felt nice, Yeah. I never once thought, this could go off and we could end up... Yeah.
Well, he never died, did he? That's the thing. If he died, you'd have been raping.
I would have been all over that.
Rape. Now he's dead. I've been waiting for this moment.
I mean, he's going to die eventually, so who knows? We're still friends at this point.
I hope at the funeral he'll be there. Open casket. It's what he would have wanted. It doesn't matter. He's dead anyway. What is he going to do about it? So you bonded on that, and then you did stand-up as well for briefly.
Yeah, I did 10 gigs. Five were amazing. I thought, I could do this, and five were the shittest points of my life, the lowest points of my life.
They are, but that's how it is when you start, I think.
Yeah, I wasn't myself. I was trying to be a kind of persona in it.
Yeah.
Once I got heckled, then I forgot where I was, and then you stood there and you hear the blood rushing through your ears and... It wasn't for me at that point.
No, but you did a gig, because I had a similar gig. I read you did a gig at the Bearcat.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, which is a bit of a bear pit in Twickenham.
Yeah. It was the day Lady Diana passed away.
Right.
And I did some stupid, I can't even remember, I thought I'd be a bit radical by saying the wrong thing, and I just got instantly booed off.
By saying, if I have sex with her now, is it rape? Yeah. Let's not have to think about it.
We're in that ballpark.
It's weird, because the day before she died, you could have done whatever you wanted.
Yeah.
You said anything, and then
probably the day after as well.
Yeah. But not on the day. But the first time I did the bear pit in Twickenham, they introduced from off stage. Did that happen with you? Usually there's a compere. They introduced
James
from off stage. Yeah. And he goes, now welcome the open spot, Richard Herring. And people just boo! So I walked on stage just to a wall of people booing without me having even... they hadn't even seen me, and they were booing. And so then I actually did my 10 minutes, but the boos just carried. So, and I remember going back, and I went, is it St Margaret's Station, right? I had to walk back to St Margaret's Station, and then I was living in Acton. It was quite a complicated journey to get back there, and the trains were really every half an hour. And I remember sitting there thinking, oh, God, I want to kill myself.
I live... That pub is my local now. Weirdly. But I had a few bad gigs. One gig, I had a fist fight with a businessman in the front row.
Good.
And never got asked back. And the second worst gig was in a place in Acton.
Yeah.
And I'd done like a really long shift waitering in the morning. I'd taken a ton of Pro Plus because I was knackered.
Yeah.
And then I had to travel all the way across from Cricklewood to Acton, and it was raining. And I got there, and there was 12 people in the audience, 11 of which were a football team. And the compere started some fucking terrible heckle war between him and the... But instead of seeing it out, he then handed it over to me. Ladies and gentlemen, Nick Frost! And I went on stage, and I literally just pulled the mic out, and someone said, get off, you fat cunt! And I went like this. Ba-dum, ba-dum, and that was it. And then I walked off, and I just went home. I just couldn't... No. It was too much.
I had lots of very bad... I mean, I persisted, and then I gave up, actually, and then I came back to it years later. But I had a gig where I kicked someone in the head in the audience. But I was... It's similar to where we are now, if you were here. It was like this, so people's heads are very much... You're on stage.
Oh, that's perfect.
And there was a guy just being a bit cheeky, and I was having to go... And I was... Some of my friends are in the audience as well. It's one of those ones where it's not going very well, and you're really feeling... And this guy was going, I sort of just looked into him, so I meant to sort of tap him in the head to shut him up, but I kicked him quite hard.
My friend's
going, yeah, remember that gig where you kicked that guy in the head?
That's in the documentary Dig, isn't it? That's you in the Brian Jones special.
I think Neil Morrissey was in the audience. I think it was before, when you know you've been in Boone. Do you remember when he was
sure.
And I think he then was for the money from Boone. I think this is the same gig. He bought a pub and they did comedy in it. So Neil Morrissey, it was before Men Behaving Badly, so it was in the kind of interim period. It was very weird.
After the Boone Millions rolled in.
He witnessed that, Neil Morrissey. Had a little celebrity.
Did you ever see him afterwards? Did you ever talk about it?
I think he might have gone hello to me at the bar.
He's terrified. He'd be frightened of you.
Yeah, he probably is. We were both the hard men of similar. Yeah. You know, perhaps people had heard about your gig, thought, oh, it's the fucking guy who punches businessmen. Now he's kicking guys in the head. Maybe that's it.
I was hitting one while holding another in my arm like that.
Was that the mid-90s? Was that early 90s? It might have been women.
It was like 12 years ago, that is.
Okay, so it was after, it was long after. I probably people were saying, oh, it's that guy who kicks people in the head, he's back again.
Yeah. Is that Richard Herring?
Fighting people. That's cool. So then, Spaced, massive hit, but you did go back and work at the restaurant between the two series.
I went back to another restaurant, a different one, Old Orleans, A Taste of the Deep South. I remember all their little taglines as well.
Mainly sort of things in the south of America, though. Yeah. That was your speciality.
Yeah, I mean, we had a swamp and turf, which was steak and alligator, which was quite nice. It was a big seller.
Sounds good. You ever attempted to go back to waiting? If you get the...
I don't know, no. God, I hope not.
But
I think I'd still be good. I was a good waiter. I think waiting taught me how to act.
Right.
In terms of you had to be a different character to every different customer. You had to change your style of service for different people.
Yeah. Did you ever... I had a friend who was an actor who was a waiter. And it was, he was quite a snooty guy, and he was quite an upper crust guy, and he was just making... And I remember once someone gave him a tip of 6p.
Mm.
Which even in the 1990s was a small tip. And he kind of chased them down. He went after them and threw it down the stairs at them, said, thanks for the fucking tip. And then he got sacked for that because he couldn't.
Yeah.
Did you ever lose? Because you think you'd lose your temper more in a restaurant situation than in a comedy club. Or you always...
I was a good waiter, so usually I didn't get bad tips. I mean, I keyed someone's car once with a. With a 50p. He was an absolute monster. Serving him was absolutely awful. He was one of those people that just wanted to belittle you in front of a group of friends.
And
I wasn't having it, so I went out And yeah, I did his car.
How did you know which car? Did you see
him? I watched him come in because I was standing by the place where the menus are given out, watching them park up and come in, so I knew who he
now
was.
Now you've said that, he can now sue you for the damage done that car. He might have listened to this.
Yeah.
It's it sounds like the kind of idiot who would listen to this podcast. He might be in trouble. And did he get recognised when you're on the TV?
A couple of times. Yeah. I'd be given a drop in a bill and they'd say, "Are you Mike from Space?" And then we'd be like, sometimes, once I said no, and then the other time I kind of went, yeah.
Because when people come to me and say you're Nick Frost, I go no. No. So they probably think you're a grumpy cunt as well.
Are you Richard Herring?
No, I'm not Richard. Someone once came up to me and said, "Are you Stuart Lee?" And I said, "No, I'm not." And he said, "You fucking are." He said, I said, "I'm really not." And I got quite arsey with him. I was with a girlfriend at the time. We were having a bit of an art. You know, people come up to you at an odd moment in your time, and I was quite arsey. So I hope he did think I was Stuart Lee. And then the story goes, and he goes, "Yeah, I saw that fucking Stuart Lee saying he wasn't himself."
What's he got to hide?
And so, I mean, that's kind of incredible. Then this thing took off, and then you were away, really. How did you meet up with... was Edgar just involved in Space? Is that how you met Edgar?
Oh, yeah, he directed Space, but he was around. He was, him and Simon knew each other, and because I was Simon's mate, then I met Edgar, and we kind of hung in a group with, David Williams and Matt Lucas and Jess, and just... hanging around and having a laugh and that. And then it became serious.
Yeah.
Then it became serious.
It became serious.
Well, I don't know why my voice went like that. And at that point, it became serious.
And there's a nice thing I saw about you when you were skint that you used to... Is this right? You used to go travel around on buses just looking at London.
Yeah, I did.
That's nice. That's a nice little detail.
Yeah, I had like... what was ever before an iPod, like a cassette, like a bag of cassettes. And I'd have like a little Walkman on, and I'd listen to the Smiths on my Discman.
You just pay one fare to get on the bus
and just travel around. And I'd also trawl secondhand shops looking for...
That could have gone a different way, couldn't it? I thought, now we're fucking getting there.
I used to trawl the penguin quarter looking for dead or dying birds. My aim was to find a first edition of a book, of a novel, and I always knew that a good first edition would be worth money.
Right.
And that was my kind
of any book at all.
Well, I mean, a good one, I suppose.
Did you find any?
I found a first edition. Close Encounters is my favourite film of all time. So when I was like 19 or 20, I found a first edition of the Close Encounters novella written by Spielberg. And then, obviously, working on Tintin with Spielberg years later, I brought him the book.
Yeah.
And he was amazed by it. He said, "This is amazing." And he signed it. He wrote this really lovely thing. And it's now in a safe.
Right.
So I thought, I kind of needed the money a bit more when I was 19. I can't go back now and give young me that book. But, it was a nice kind of cycle of...
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of astonishing thing, I guess, that you can go from... That can, in 12 years, you can go from being a waiter and meeting a guy making a noise to working with Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
It's
easy.
It's easy.
It was really easy.
How do you do it? How do I do it? How can I... can I come and pretend to... Why don't we do a sort of Prince and the Pauper thing?
Oh, we'll swap.
Where I swap lives.
And no one knows...
And then I can go and meet Steven Spielberg. The problem will be that I will not be cool when I meet him.
I don't think he'd know any difference, to be fair. No. He wouldn't know.
Let me see where I'm going to go next. I was going to say, yes. You were writing a novel as well when you were working in the...
Yeah.
I'd like to hear about your novel. What was your novel?
It was called...
I'm going to mainly talk about him in his restaurant, which I don't think most interviewers would concentrate so much. Most people are going, "Tell me about working with Peter Jackson." Fuck that. What was your novel that you were writing
about? What
were
your free staff meals like? I fell in love with a girl after I came back from Israel. Right. And I wanted her... I mean, she was really, really beautiful. She was one of those ones who was really out of my league, but somehow my comedy wooed her. And I wanted her to think that I was this kind of writer. And so I thought, I'm going to write a novel about my time in Israel. and it was called An Alcoholic's Guide to the Holy Land. And I didn't have a table when I was, you know, where we lived, so I every day I sat and wrote on an ironing board with a typewriter. And, yeah, I wrote a novel.
How was it? You could probably publish it now.
It's terrible. It's awful. There's probably a thousand spelling mistakes every sentence.
But you were very young when you went. You were like 17 or 18 when you went to the...
Yeah, I was 18.
Because that's very young. I mean, I had a year off and you're such an idiot, basically, aren't you, in that kind of time.
Oh, I was a real idiot in Israel, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not just you, I meant one, but...
Yeah.
You, when you were 17, I imagine, was an idiot.
Oh, yeah, I was a real idiot, a proper
what
idiot.
What did you do on it? Because I heard about kibbutzes, and I didn't realise they still carried on as late as...
Yeah.
We could have. What did you do on a kibbutz?
I worked physically very hard, nice. And then we finished work at 1 o'clock, and we ended up just getting smashed every day, all day, every day. That's it.
With Israelis?
Generally the Israelis kept themselves to themselves. Right. We were subhuman to the Israelis. You know, we were shipped in like meat bags and we did the work and we lived in shit houses with horrible bed bugs. And, you know, I think they just saw us as a disruptive influence to the community, and we were kind of pushed to the side. But the longer you stayed, the more you committed, the more they started to like you.
Right.
So after like a year and a bit, I was invited to sit with Israeli families at Shabbat meal and stuff. And it's like, I had arrived. I had my own room. I didn't have to share with four others. You know, it was a real cushy setup toward the end.
Once you've been there for 12 months, you're kind of being excited.
Yeah. I was moved
Stockholm
from...
Stockholm syndrome, from, basically. I'm being used as a slave, and now I love the people who are doing this to me.
Yeah, I was moved from, you know, working in the chicken farm, and, you know, toward the end, I was like a heating engineer, and I had a little van. I got to drive a van around, and they, you know, they trusted me.
How do they sell this to you when you're going to go out there? Do they say it's going to be amazing?
Free drink! they kind of took care of everything you needed in terms of, you know, being fed and clothed and razors and free cigarettes and a free disco with free beer twice a week and just lots of very attractive South African and, you know, Australian girls and... You know, it was a good time. You should go.
Were there any 45-year-old men?
No, 40's the cut-off.
Is it?
Yeah. I couldn't go back now. Which makes me feel bad, makes me feel old.
Yeah, we are old, and I'm older than you, so fuck you. Now, the thing I wanted to talk to you about that I mustn't forget to talk to you about, I've talked about you on a podcast before, when I did a podcast with Andrew Collins. I'm a big fan of much of your work.
Okay, thank you.
But...
hang on. Yeah. Movie Mistakes Uncovered and Cut. No, I don't know.
In The Boat That Rocked.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny, we were talking about rape.
We were?
Yeah. You're involved in a kind of comedy rape scene in The Boat That Rocked that I found quite offensive. Well, did that strike you? There's a scene in The Boat That Rocked where Nick's character, I suspect Nick would do the same.
It was based on something that happened to me.
Lures a woman back to his a young girl back to his
Say
cabin.
Woman, you have to say like young girl, and make it even
13-year-old girl back to his cabin. And then invite someone else who's, you know, an attractive young man to... Yeah. And then they're going to have sex, but it all falls apart and they don't have sex.
Yeah, because he's a virgin.
Yeah, he's a virgin, so you're going to help him lose his virginity by raping a woman. Is that comedy?
Laughing so gaily. when Richard Curtis pitches it to you, it doesn't sound like rape. It sounds great. And, you know, I didn't question it.
Did
sadly.
Anyone ever mention that at the time to you, that it was... No, just me.
No, Your Honour.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone can blame you. You're an actor. I just wonder if you ever... if you get presented with a scene and you thought, hold on, this is a bit dodgy, are you able to go, I don't want to do it, or do you have to...
I think you'd probably have to say something before you got to the point where you were just about to shoot it.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have to bring it up.
The scene, right?
Yeah. You'd have to bring it up in rehearsals or... But no, I mean, so far...
No one else has spotted that.
No.
I think it's a low point in British cinema.
I don't know what to say.
I should have left it to the end of the interview, because now there's going to just be an awkward tension. But I loved I loved Shaun of the Dead. That was great.
Thank you.
Where you killing zombies and stuff. I have no moral problem with that.
That zombie.
With you killing zombies with LLPs. I think that's a good thing to do. So you made up for it with that.
I saw Sade once in a hotel after Shaun of the Dead, and she gave me a really dirty look. And she was bogging at me, and I kind of went like that. And she went, and she just turned away.
Ah, so you upset people, don't you? In this life, was that the Boat the Rock was all kind of based on? Like the real antics.
On an actual rape,
the real antics of the rape.
No, I don't think it was. I mean...
just Richard. I should be blaming me. I'll get Richard Curtis on and I'll talk to him about it.
Yeah, speak to Richard. I think a lot of it was based on fact, and a lot of it was, Richard's lovely imagination.
Yeah.
We did get some old DJ saying it wasn't like that. We didn't have that much fun. That's what they're saying. I did a thing with Johnny Walker. He wanted me to come into the studio to see how he, see how he worked, and he made like a real fuss of getting me in. He pulled the chair in and sat me down, and I was in there for 5 minutes, and then he just said, "Okay, you've got to leave now." And he opened the door and I had to go, and that was it. And I hadn't done anything. I just sat there and just watched what he was doing. And then when he put a tune on, and I was saying, "So Johnny, what when you were?" And he just had enough. I think it was just cramping him having someone sitting on him. And, it was too much for him.
Did you smell my fart backstage when I did?
I didn't.
No. I'm relieved about that.
I mean, there was a lot. You wafted it, and I saw you wafting it.
I was politely wafting it away.
I was upset that I'd seen the wafting. Because I knew what had happened.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask
me
you...
me probably wanted to smell it a bit.
I think you'd have been interested. I had, a sort of chicken and bean soup for lunch today.
Ah.
And it's never... the bean thing is never... I should have thought ahead. So, I ask all my guests this question, Nick.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to suck your own cock?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Alas, someone just on. That's the first honest man.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I have.
Yeah. How'd it go?
Good.
Could you do it?
Really well. No, I was probably... Seriously, I was probably 5 inches from the helmet. And I ended up just coming into my mouth from that distance. But... no, I'd never got it in. I had committed, and I was afraid that if I had come down from the position I was in,
let's just get this. So it was the idea of you, even though you couldn't do it, the idea of you being able to suck your own cock was so exciting that you still ejaculated.
Yeah. Well, I was there. It was ready. Yeah, I think I'd gotten to a point in the wank where I thought, I'm going to try this, and then I got back there, and it was too late at that point. I think the actual physical, act of me trying to, it just fell out. I didn't come. It just it fell out like a solid plastic rod.
Oh, God, I may not be able to carry. Oh, dear, that's the most I've laughed in any of these so far. There have been some very funny things.
It's funny because it's true. it's funny and true.
We may have to take a break as they wipe tears from my face. And now I've just imagined it. So... Well, let's go on to what you're working on now, because we may be... it's ridiculous how time flies by when you're talking about sucking your own cock. When you're asking all the important questions... This is a big interview. I was thinking this is a bit like Frost Nixon, isn't it? But it's Frost Herring, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. If they ever... They might make a film with this one. They might make a film with this one day.
I can't wait for Michael Sheen to talk about the beige rod falling out of his dick.
It's mate, I think if they make the film, you'll probably play both parts, so they'll just do a split screen thing and you'll be Richard Herring as well. I go, can I play Richard Herring in this film? No. Nick Frost. We've got Nick Frost. How about Nick Frost? No, Nick Frost is playing Nick Frost. Michael Sheen is Nick Frost. good. So what are you? You're doing a dance. You're doing.
I am.
What, the salsa dance?
Yeah, I'm doing another kind of Cuban Fury.
Yeah, you're back there in Central America.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I'm big fan of Cuba. You know, every time I talk about this film, I get people laughing like that. Yeah, right. And it's I think it will really. It's something completely different, I think, in terms of what I've done in before. And
you haven't started filming yet.
No, 2 weeks. We're 2 weeks away. Yeah. I've danced every day for 6 hours a day for the last 6 months, and it's. I don't know why the fuck I even mentioned. I don't know why I had the idea.
You came up with the idea.
I did. It was my idea, and I hate dancing. And I was an all right dancer before this. I think what put me off dancing generally was if I got into a dance and I was enjoying it, I'd catch someone looking at me, and it was that look that went, hey, he's quite good for a big guy. And it upset me, you know, it really upsets me. And it was kind of ruined my wedding because I didn't want to dance my wife. And I just put my hands on her shoulders and we just kind of moved about for 5 seconds and then we kind of waved the guests on. And I guess it was a device to kind of get over this fear I have of dancing. Yeah.
In our wedding, in our first dance, we just really went for it, the thing I was most nervous about. I wasn't nervous about the speech, and I hadn't prepared the speech, and I did a really rubbish speech as a result. And I've been really nervous about the first dance. Then I just really went for it and went nuts. I was a bit drunk.
Yeah, the opposite. My speech was amazing.
Was it?
Yeah, it was incredible.
My niece came up to me, who's like 20 years old, and said, "You're the coolest person I've ever seen." As a result of me doing this dance, which I was surprised. Surprised. She's French though, and let's not talk about them. Eh, today, one all. There you are, split loyalties. You've been in training for 6 months salsa dancing,
salsa, New York style, LA style, Cuban.
So many styles.
There are a lot of styles. I never imagined. I thought it was just one thing.
And so what's that film about? The film is about a guy deciding to...
Yeah, it's about this guy called Bruce Garrett who was like potentially a world champion as a 13-year-old. And something happens to him on his way to the world championships. He gets split from the group and, you know, he's a big shot in the world of junior salsa, but out on the street he looks like a peacock and he's tracked down and attacked by these cool kids. And it breaks him, essentially.
Right.
And so then we see him, we cut forward 25 years, and it's me, clearly, you know, not a salsa world champion. And this very beautiful American woman comes to work at my office, who's played by Rashida Jones. And I find out that she salsa dances, and it spurs me back into action. So I take it up again, hopefully that I can woo her through the medium of dance.
I bet you do. I bet that's
who knows.
I do. I bet.
She dies out on the tundra, and I end up raping her with my beige rod.
Now you've had this.
You see, the ending is different.
You're going to go in tomorrow. I've had some ideas about this.
What about this? Read this.
That's great. And you're the third in your trilogy, the Cornetto trilogy.
Yeah, we start shooting. I think at the end of September at this point. So I'll go straight from Cuban Fury into that. I think it's going to be pretty cool. Edgar and Simon have written a great script, and I really caught myself then sounding like a knobhead because I was going to say, yeah, you know, I'm just really excited about. I think we're going to have a good 6 months.
Well, I'm sure everyone's looking forward to it. What's the premise of the? Are you allowed to say?
No, I won't. I'm allowed. Sure, I'm a 40-year-old man. I can do what I want. But we said too much about things on Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, and then you know, that 2-year period where we were making it and thinking about it, people were like, "Where's Hot Fuzz? Where's Hot Fuzz?" You know, it got too much in the end. So now we've decided just not to say anything and surprise people.
What would you say was your least favourite Simon Pegg film? There's a lot to choose from, right? There's a lot of stinkers to choose from, aren't there, don't you?
Probably Hot Fuzz.
Really?
No.
No, because I can tell you a lot.
It's not for me to say. I'd never say it here.
Not here.
Never.
Will you tell me backstage?
Yeah.
Because then I'll just come in the next one. Fine, I got it. Is it Run, Fat Boy, Run?
That wasn't my voice, by the way. That wasn't my internal monologue.
Is it the one, the Toby Young one? That's got to be the Toby Young one.
What's that one?
What, how did it all go up my...
Oh, House and His Friends and Elliot.
Yeah, yeah.
No, you know what? I think we should not talk about this because it sounds... I just sound like a...
I'm trying to split the two of you up and then he'll go, I'm looking for a sort of fat 5'7" bloke to be in the next...
No matter what the film's like, yeah. I like him. I like watching him. He engages me and I find him funny.
I do really like... I mean, I think he's amazing. I'm only messing around. But Fat Boy Run is shit.
I always thought that I should have been the fat boy, and then you see him training, and he comes out of a, and it's him.
Yeah, I think I'm just jealous because I had an idea about doing a thing because I ran a marathon. Can't believe it's like you doing dancing, yeah. Me doing a marathon, and so then I thought that was quite a good idea.
What was your time?
I did 4 hours, 17 minutes and 50 seconds, just getting inside the 4 hours, 18-minute barrier.
The mythical 4 hour, 18-minute barrier. You beat that bloke in a diving suit. So.
I'd beat that 100-year-old man. how do you feel when you're seeing him in Star Trek and things like that? When you were sort of presumably big fans of those sort of shows. And then how is that to your friend?
That film was amazing. I really like the first Star Trek. I really like what J.J. Abrams has done to it. And I've always been, you know, I mean, the same as him. If I've always been really proud of what he's done because we've grown up from kids and I'm never jealous of I'm not fucking jealous of...
I wasn't saying that.
You thought it. I'm just... I'm happy to I'm fucking happy to be here. I like watching him.
Yeah. Isn't it just good?
I like watching him shit. That's what I felt like I was saying.
Well, you slept with him for 9 months.
That weird brown rod falling out into the... Wouldn't it be better if it was all rods? Just...
It would be. If there was a God, then that's what would have happened. That's the proof there is no God. All excrement would be in rod shape. And I count sperm as excrement. Yes, I do.
I'd like to hear a, you know, ding, 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 ding. That's what a poo, that would be the signifier that you've done a poo.
So it's a metal, it's not just, it's a metal rod.
Oh, yeah.
And then you can use that.
Yeah.
You know. I mean,
proper door open with it.
Compost, I suppose, but you could use it as.
You'd push it into the, you just push it into the earth.
Proper door open. Yeah, look at that. Oh, dear, you're a silly man. And so am I. I had a brilliant question. I hate that when that happens. You get decided of just a brilliant question. But it must be odd when. Aren't you freaked out when you're now working with all these amazing.
I don't think about it. I just get on. I just get on and work.
I'm not talking about myself so much today. I'm talking about Spielberg and Jackson.
No, I don't think about it. I just get on with it and work hard and try and do my best and not kill myself through fear.
I was going to tell you, this is a nice thing to make up for me being rude to you earlier. As I was walking through Leicester Square, there was a woman walking past me she was on the phone and she said that Snow White film you're in was brilliant. She was saying to her friend how brilliant it was.
Nice.
So that's the real public.
That they've spoken.
You're a dwarf in that. How does that work out?
There was a bit like a big ray that we walked through in the morning and it shrunk us down.
Right.
A lot of it. It's not as high tech as you'd imagine. A lot of it was we'd be walking in trenches, and then the other actors were walking on the land above us, and we'd kind of roll our bodies like that to give the dwarf like appearance.
Right.
I should say as well. There's a 100 dwarf march in outcry at the film because they hadn't used dwarf actors.
Yeah, well, I was about to move on to the idea that that must be annoying for dwarf actors. Why were they not using dwarf actors? They wanted.
I mean, there were dwarf actors on set who were stunt guys, and, because it's fine to say, "Oh, we'll take 13 inches out of your height," but then when I start fighting a guard and I'm clearly twice as wide as him, the illusion breaks down. So we went to dwarf college for 3 weeks, and we were. You know, we were paired up with a dwarf. Mine was called Lewis. And we just spent 3 weeks wandering around after each other, trying to ape each other's movements. You know, I think you'd have to ask Richard Curtis why the dwarves weren't used. But yeah, I mean,
so it's quite controversial. The dwarf actors are annoyed about.
I'm surprised they can only get 100. I mean, it doesn't seem.
There aren't that many of them. That's the thing.
Do you not think
they've got it sewn up? You can only have so many Snow White and Seven Dwarf pantomimes because there aren't. You know, then you have to start just getting children in and stuff.
I've heard of a pantomime with Snow White and three dwarves.
It doesn't have to be seven. Then why is it seven?
Can I just say that the dwarves that we play aren't human beings with dwarfism. You know, they are Tolkien-esque dwarves. They're miners. You know, they're gold. Who's that? Someone leaving or someone coming
it's
up
a
with
dwarf.
A pistol? It's a dwarf.
Dwarves have enough.
Yeah, you know.
You have no morality in your films. That's where you take work from dwarves. Whatever the script calls for, you'll take it. That's it's a great film. A woman on a phone said it in Leicester Square, so that's got to be a good. It's got to be good, right?
Yeah. That's enough for me.
It is. I think if I was walking down the road and I heard someone say I was listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast,
she said it was all right.
It was all right. I'd be surprised, but I'd be delighted by that. And it's interesting you were talking about being beaten up in your film, because you were quite badly beaten up.
I was, yeah.
What happened with that? Was that?
I'd been at a party, Joe Cornish and Adam Buxton's party, like years and years ago.
Don't cheer. This is a serious story about a man being beaten up. Don't cheer because you've heard the name of someone you like. Listen carefully to the interesting story.
And it was like 3 a.m. and I was in the wrong part of town. I had a really, really horrible moustache, which I think drew them to me. It was like five, 19-year-old boys.
Right.
And as a man, you get that weird spider sense in you that something bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
And the ringleader kind of came up to me, and the others flanked me. And you know, things are bad when someone says, "What are you looking at, you fat cunt?"
Yeah.
Like from here. I kind of thought, oh, I've diffused this, and they wandered off into the service station to get some chicken tikka slices, I imagine. And then they walked off behind me. I thought, that's it, we're done, I'm all right. Let's, you know, try and get a cab. And then they just attacked me from behind and just, I think there's nothing else to say apart from, you know, they literally kicked me to fuck.
Right.
And as a man, I'd always feared this, you know, growing up in London, you think this is going to happen to me at one point. And then it happened. And I remember thinking, it's not too bad, actually, while I was getting beaten. And then it got to a point where they were taking penalties with my head. They were taking turns.
That was worse, though, was it?
But after about four,
yeah.
I then remember thinking, I probably should go to sleep. And then, you know, the last one came in and that was it. And I woke up in the back of an ambulance. But two guys had run in from nowhere.
Right.
And chased them off.
So it was over nothing? It wasn't them recognising you?
This was, I mean, before space.
You know.
But they the attack was so bad, I woke up in hospital and I thought I'd gone blind because they had kicked my contact lenses out of my eyes.
Oh, God.
what a story!
Because I was luckily almost exactly the same thing, and I was outside a pub, and I was trying to get off with some woman, and she made a joke about René Descartes, but wasn't funny. But because I was trying to get off with her, I was like that. And as I looked away, I just kind of caught the eye of this big fucking guy, and he'd been drinking with his mate, and his mate at this point was just sort of slumping down the wall, right? So he obviously just punched his mate. That was his friend who he knew. And I caught his eye laughing, and he went, "What are you fucking laughing at? You think it's funny me hitting my friend in the face?" I was going, no. I was like 21 years old, no. And I thought, should I describe to him why I was laughing? No, I was laughing a joke about René Descartes.
You fucking what?
But he just kind of came for me and he just lamped me and I was on one of those, you know, outside a pub and they've got those trestle tables, and I was sort of trapped in one of those. I had one leg in and one leg out, and there was no way. I would have just legged it if I could have got up and I'd have been able to escape. He was gigantic.
And he would have probably beaten her up.
Yeah. So he pulled me to the ground and he started kicking me. He kicked me once in the head. But then near the broadcasting house, this very little diminutive PA got up and actually grabbed. He had a glass ready to smash into my head.
Wow.
And she got up and grabbed his thing and talked him out of hitting me, which was amazing because she was tiny. And sort of basically, I think.
But that's probably the only person who could have done that. You know what I mean? In terms of
But
soothing a maniac.
But the good side of the story, I did have sex with the girl I was chatting up. Because she thought I might die. And so felt sorry for me for having created it. So
I wish my story
out of that.
I wish my story had that kind of ending.
Then it was quite awkward for a while. And
how did it end?
Badly.
Good.
But hey, still had still tick.
Yeah.
That's all they count, say.
Yeah. I felt very cocky after it. I thought, I've had mine, that's it now, I'm done.
And I did tell the story in the metro, yes, thank you for pointing that. There's always people here. Yes, he has told that story in the metro. I did tell it in the metro, yeah. I didn't say I shagged there, did I? Then I said you got some extra value. Thank you. It's good. It's good. I've only got so many stories. I do. When you think how much podcasts I've fucking done, it's amazing. It's amazing how many times I've failed to tell.
I think you could.
I think I put a bit of a. I didn't put that
a
in,
short
that
PA.
In. I didn't put the bit about the short PA in. No. It's nice to meet them. They're having their own.
Yeah, I love it.
I hope you don't mind. Now, there's some people over here who want to have a little chat about my work.
I like it a lot.
I don't, I know we've brought you out here.
I look at this guy with a gun.
It's very good. Thank you. No, that's good. It's nice to have that. This is as close as I get to a woman walking past me with a mobile phone, a woman in my own audience saying, yeah, you're quite good. It's a kind of disarming heckle. Yeah, it's good. I've heard this before, but it was good. I'm glad I heard it again. I thought it was good. It was better the second time. I write a weekly column in the Metro.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Yeah, so think about that next time.
All right.
You're talking to Peter Jackson via video phone. Think about that. I get I get almost £200 a week for that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's money, isn't it?
It's money.
How much
do you get for being in a Hollywood film? I imagine not on a weekly basis. That's every week guaranteed.
Yeah.
Until they tell me to stop.
Yeah.
I can't imagine you. You must be on maybe £150 a week, are you? If you're doing tin tin,
yeah.
So I'm not trying to show off, right? I don't want to belittle my guests, I was going to ask you one of David Baddiel's questions there by mistake. So, what's it like being the sixth sexiest Jew in?
Well, I mean, after my time in Israel,
This is a good fact about you, and I didn't think this would be a fact, but I think it is a fact, that you killed Mrs. Overall.
I did kill Mrs. Overall,
from Acorn Antiques.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
I don't think I've ever seen the episode either. But
did anyone know that?
No.
No, fuck, there you go. And this is, honestly, my audience is like Wikipedia.
They would know.
They'd know everything. The man going, I didn't know, I knew it. Yeah, there's a man going, yeah. What are you saying over there now? It's getting little conversations going on. What did you, it was her, pointing her out.
God, you really dumped her in then.
It was her. Farrow. Mia Farrow in the second row. What was he? What?
Yes, Kerry Mulligan.
That's nicer. I was thinking of Mia Farrow now. Now she's bitter and angry at Woody Allen. What were you saying?
Nothing.
Okay, nothing. If you're not prepared to share it with the whole class, then don't say it at all. Have you ever worked with Woody Allen, talking of Mia Farrow?
No.
Ah, so you're not all that great then, are you?
I'm not there yet. One day, maybe.
I've seen many of his films.
I don't know if I would now.
Not very good, but the last one was all right.
I don't know.
The Goodnight Sweetheart remake he did.
I went off the board.
I thought that'd get... Yeah, Goodnight in Paris. It's like Goodnight Sweetheart, isn't it? That's why it's great. What, Goodnight Sweetheart or Midnight in Paris?
He remade the sitcom, Goodnight Sweetheart.
It's basically Goodnight Sweetheart, set in Paris.
No, it's not.
He can travel back in time.
Didn't he win an SFX award? Did he travel back in time? I've never...
He travelled back in time,
didn't he? Oh, yeah, okay.
He travels back to the times of all those, that
lot.
Dali. So now she's getting talkative, isn't she?
She knows now.
Oh, Dali's an innie. I think, shall I talk to Nick? Do you mind? Fuckers. We're nearly done. How was it killing Mrs. Overall? She's one of the most loved characters in the world, and you killed her.
I just pulled the fucking trigger. I think it was only like a 10-minute sketch for the history of sitcom thing, and I'd worked out, and my character was like a big cockney, and then a minute before we were meant to do it, Victoria Wood said, "Oh, can you make him a Brummy?" And it just ruined it. Ruined me.
Right. Didn't know. Oh, put your fucking hands up!
It didn't work so good.
Did anyone see him do that?
I think they've said no before. You don't have to hammer home the point.
Did anyone see it? No one saw it. Who saw me be the voice of a spider in school's TV in 1993? No one did, because I recorded it, but then the tape went wrong and they got someone else to do it. That's what they said.
They got the other Nick Frost to do it.
Imagine getting a really shitty job. I wrote a script and then they said, "Oh, you can be the little voice of a spider." Then I did it and they went, "The tape went wrong." That didn't happen.
What was the voice?
And then I got... I think it was like
Spider's voice.
I'm a spider. I can't remember what it was. It was like 20 years ago. I've drunk a lot since then. Right, I think we're nearly at an end. Has anyone got any questions for Nick Frost? Like, I've been so rude to him now. Let's try and
do your eagle eyes.
You tweeted that earlier, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
What did he say?
I don't think the eagle eye is going to work on a podcast.
Do the eagle eyes.
It's literally just that, and that's it. Yeah. I should look at you when I do it.
Yeah, do it. You've made that young boy's... He's from the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
He's got his little starlight hat on.
He has got a hat on, so now suddenly I'm worried. If he is, he's a heavily tattooed 14-year-old boy.
Maybe that's his affliction. He has tattooism.
Just got worse.
They just appear. Oh, horrible thing that would be. Richard?
It would. You know. Having tattoos on your
face. They just appear.
I'm sorry, I lost interest for a second. I've got to do another one of these after this. It's getting hot in here, isn't it?
It is hot in
Let's
here.
Let's take up all that clue. So, you very kindly, for the competition, which we'll do at the end of the next one, you've donated Paul.
Signed.
Blu-ray signed.
Worth £8.
I love Richard Herring, it says. That was before this podcast. And also Hot Fuzz on Blu-ray.
And also a very very rare Japanese Paul poster. It's pretty cool.
It is. Look, that man's excited. It's
worth £6. Or a million yen.
We'll do that at the end of the David Baddiel. How would you say David Baddiel's name?
I'd say David Baddiel.
Baddiel.
Yeah.
We'll find out. It's one of the questions I'm going to ask him. David, how you pronounce his name.
Baddiel.
Yeah. Now it's getting a bit racist.
It's French.
Did you enjoy the football?
We didn't lose. It was quite nice. That's why I think I enjoyed the Jubilee so much, because we won. You know what I mean? There was no chance of us losing.
Did you like the Jubilee?
I loved it.
Would you have gone to Buckingham Palace and performed on stage in front of Her Majesty the Queen if you'd been asked?
Yes. I don't know what I would have done. I could have done Eagle Eyes. She loves it. The Queen loves Eagle Eyes. Philip loves eagle eyes. I like to think Philip was hospitalised because his inside cock blew up. Because he needed to do a wee so badly and he couldn't get off the dais, right? He couldn't move and it popped.
I think the rod of urine was stuck in there.
Well, it was so long that it
pulled out of the magnet.
They had to get like a rod of carbon and charge it and then tease the electrically charge it and tease it out.
Do you remember any of your jokes from your first stand-up set? That we could end on.
No, I don't think I do. There was a bit about an orangutan in my anus.
Right. Sounds pretty
there
good.
There was something about a kid. A kid I went to school with who had a face. His head was a peanut and it was covered in chocolate and a crisp shell. And we threw him a massive surprise birthday and we jumped out. We said, "Surprise!" Oh, his face was a treat. Obviously, that was a long time ago, and now they're M&Ms, but it didn't work so well. But yeah, I mean, it was that kind of shit, essentially.
Look at that. You could have done that at Buckingham Palace in front of the Queen.
I would have done that, and I said, "Ladies and gentlemen, madness!" And we've done like that.
It couldn't have been as lazy as what Peter Kay did, that's all I would say. So, as playing. Sorry. It's my own little sad world of jealousy.
I'm going to put it back as I found it.
That's good.
It was like that.
David Baddiel might like it that way. God, imagine how that joke's going to go down when I'm doing it for the next hour as well. When you hear how sick they are of it already, do you hear this? You just hear that silence and someone going... Oh.
A lot more dwarves will walk out.
Have you had a nice time? Thanks for coming.
I've had
in.
A very nice time.
Can
yeah.
you ask all your Hollywood stars friends to come on Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre
yeah.
podcast?
Yeah.
Hooray! I was hoping to prove Nick Frost wasn't as nice a man as he appears, and that fame and success had changed him. I thought I'd get him, and I succeeded to him. I think we've seen the real monster behind the mask. Will you please give it up for my fantastic guest, Nick Frost, ladies and gentlemen? You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, Rehearsal de Pur, with me, Richard Herring, and my special guest, Nick Frost. It was produced by Ben Walker. Music was by Pest, but they're quite nice guys, even though they're called that. Thanks to Orange Mark and the British Comedy Guide, where you can get this if you don't want to go through iTunes. Thank you to Ian Tunes of iTunes as well. This has been a Fuzz and Sky Potato production for the internet. Hooray! How'd you like them Sky Potatoes? Thank you for listening to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. If you've enjoyed it and it's free, that's nice, isn't it? There's lots of things you can do to repay us. Come down and see another show. Unfortunately, the next two shows are sold out. Stuart Lee next week and Graham Linehan and Armando Iannucci the week after. But do feel free to download them for free anyway. You can come and see me doing Talking Cock. If you go to richthang.com and click on gigs, you can see there's lots of preview gigs all around the country. Also at the Edinburgh Fringe. And then there's a tour coming up and those dates are starting going in as well. So it'd be lovely to see you there. And you can also buy the book Talking Cock from www.gofasterstripe.com along with lots of my other merchandise. Our producer Ben has been working on stuff. He produces Do the Right Thing, which is nearly as high in the iTunes chart as this show, but obviously not as high. So you can listen to that for free, or if you want to go down and see it on June the 26th, it's at the Phoenix near Oxford Street, near Oxford Circus, and the guest will be, one of the guests will be Katie Brand from the audience of Series 2 of Fist of Fun. If you buy the next series of Fist of Fun, you will see her in the audience. But it'd be fantastic if you wanted to do any of those things, but you don't have to. Just listen for nothing. Why not? Who cares?
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh yeah, I know all the cool words, and would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.